Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation. Foundation.
Excuse me for interruption. Will you come and remind us?
The Foundation with Hard Grant is brought to you by Alive, Baja Retreat and Spa, the Bahamas Football Association, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, and Marco's Pizza.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company. It is a wonderful thing to be here in the land of the living, chopping it down on Cinco de Mayo. On is it Jubilee Day, the day of Jubilee? Y'all got to give me some more information about that. But it's so good to be in your company today, really being able to do this. I want to get kind of kick this right off. You know, we get a great show kind of lined off for you. But before we do that, we have to do things in decency and order and thank all those persons that remain committed to being able to, support the show. And really, because this is how we pay our bills. And we thank you, man. We're truly grateful for all those persons who continue to be able to support our show, our big sponsors, the local sponsors, all those particular persons. We are grateful to you and really grateful for you in this particular time and space. I want to say happy birthday to Sherman Brown. Sherman Brown, you know Sherman. This is Sherman Brown. Zedness. Well, you know Sherman, right? Sherman is my church guy. He's my church brother. So he hit me up. He says, Howard, today's my birthday. That's all. Just one text. No morning. No afternoon, nothing. Today's my birthday. So, I knew what to do with that, right? So I'm telling him happy birthday today. Happy birthday to Sherman. I think Joy Gibberloo's birthday is also. Her birthday's today also. And also Solo Maid, his birthday's today. My people down in Grand Bahama, Ileana. We call her Illy. She worked with me and Tabitha Bow. Her birthday is also today. And tomorrow, I think Aaron Green and Jacozy is going to be celebrating birthdays. So all those persons celebrating birthdays, we say happy birthday to you and pray that bless you, expand your territory, and you move in the direction that you've been called to move in and purpose with passion on this side of eternity. We thank you so very, very kindly, guys, for tuning in today. And you know that today is Friday. So it's Tiki Fridays. It is always a great thing, absolutely wonderful to be able to be in your company to talk about Tiki Fridays with my very good friend, Byron Colley, all the way down there at the Tiki Hut on the Western Esplanade, right there in the shadows on the northern side, right there in the shadows of to the northwest of the point. You can go there on the Western Esplanade and enjoy an absolutely wonderful evening with Byron. Let him know you come from the Foundation. Byron, say, Howard, these people ain't coming. Guys, please show up. Check out Byron down there at the Western Esplanade at the Tiki Hut. They're celebrating something called Full Moon this evening from 7 p.m. all the way to 1 a.m. They're celebrating Full Moon, and you can be able to go there and check that out. They said 5 for 25, and you get an extra something free. I think it's Corona. Guys, check that out. I thank you so very kindly, Byron, for being able to do that. It is open to all and sundry. We want you to be able to come down, enjoy yourself this weekend, which is a sweet thing at the can if you're going to be able to do that, and have a great time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to be able to put this out there. Yeah, I wanted to thank everybody. We did all our laundry and did everything first, but I want to let you know something. I have someone in the studio with me. If you did not have a chance
to check me out. If you did not have a chance to go on social media, if you didn't look on Guardian Facebook page, if you didn't look on the Foundation's Facebook page, if you didn't look in these particular areas, you're not connected to the 827-0111 WhatsApp and broadcast this, you may not see this. And if you want to, please hit me up, 827-0111 Howard, put me on the list. Put me a name there, and I'll pop you in there. But I put some information out last night. Had a great conversation this week. The gentleman and I actually had a great conversation prior to on the golf course. And I was enamored. I mean, I'm telling you, we started. I don't know if he recognized that the time went like this, but I looked at it and I didn't feel it. You ever been in these kind of moments in life and you recognize I have to soak up as much as possible in this kind of a time and space? I sat on the golf course and spoke with the gentleman who's sitting here with me, and he told me about a great deal of experiences. I think so many of us are kind of wrapped up in just existing and not understanding that there are experiences to be had. And this gentleman actually told me about a great deal of experiences that he's had. He's a CEO, he's a businessman, he's a globalist, right? That is what Jones Communication called him. Watch me. I know he's going to look at me and say, oh, hold on now. He's a globalist, a globetrotter in every aspect, really being able to do both local, regional, and international business to be able to reform things and really incorporate a true sense of change in these particular areas. You would have known him as a pilot. I got some information. He was, well, how would you know he was the first black pilot, you know? And I'm grateful to be able to sit in this company today, to have this conversation on record right here on the Foundation with none other than Mr. Craig Flowers. Mr. Flowers, my brother, it is so good to see you. I'm so grateful that you're in the house with us today.
Howard, it's always a pleasure. Sorry I took so long to get here. I knew that you had asked me, I think it was maybe 6-7 months ago.
I did.
When you addressed me there at the facility at the Sports Center.
Yes.
And like I said, you know, I'm always trying to accommodate and to speak, and I'm so pleased that you enjoyed our conversation to the point that you felt that I don't know if you were with the Guardian.
No, I was at another location at the time.
Yes, yes. But I'm, you know, fast forwarding, certainly it's a pleasure being here. Listening to the accolades and all of the things that you spoke of, certainly JCN has been a part of my journey in the media. But certainly for me, you know, Howard, like I said, everybody says to me how humble I seem to be, because I keep alluding to the fact that I'm just had an amazing opportunity as a kid from Farm Road and in the Grantstown community area. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate in life, yeah. and I'm glad to be here.
I want to dive deeper into that conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about all manner of things. We're going to take our time and chop this down. I know that you're eager. You want to get your telephone calls in there. You want to be able to, you know, because I got some text last evening. Randy Butler more specifically called me and said, tell Mr. Flowers he's been instrumental in everything that I've done to ascend to this position in life, and I'm truly grateful for him. So Randy Butler says hello. Luby George says, he's a wealth of knowledge, Howard. He could be able to talk extensively about what's happening down there in Haiti. So we're going to get into those conversations. Yeah. But let me be decent. Let's get to our first commercial break and be right back after this.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with the Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
It's a special day for mom and she deserves the best. Bring her into Baja and let's de-stress. We'll pamper her and make her feel safe. Get mom a nice spa day.
Come visit us at Baja Retreat Spa. Purchase a gift for mom and call us today at 323-6711.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Excuse me for me to interruption. Before you come, I'm a little reminder to say, this coming Friday, I'm a police corner over the lawn. You went to see my number one sound round town. I did some Friday evening, boom! The people have tired of working. Fana, fana, Lord, them hear the disco playing. Make them feel like dancing. Ain't no summer set. Britain will be great down with the disco operator. 5 double 18 and a 6 liter. I this a digital sweeter. See London to start up with the echo chamber. Watch your man. Play the play. I demo T-Rock the game.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, live and in full effect today. I'm not even going to throw the numbers out just yet. I know you're eager. You're on there like a Western, hot shooter. You're ready to go and trying to do your thing. But the thing is that let's get this foundation out here first. And then on the second hour, we're going to be able to get into, some great conversations and open up the lines for you. So we want to do that. Now, I want to know this, Mr. Flowers, like I said, I put your information out yesterday after we spoke, I wanted to be able to kind of let persons know what to expect for our Friday show. A lot of persons know that we try to do our best to be laid back, but that has not happened. It has not happened from the inception of the show. We've always kind of hit a couple octaves or been able to invite someone to really talk about national issues of growth and development. A lot of persons know you far and wide from one perspective or another, depending on their social position, their age, and sort of their interest. They know you for one thing or another. But, rest assured, you're known far and wide throughout the country as persons continue to be able to look at you quietly, I believe, in awe to see your success, not necessarily monetarily, but your persistence, your commitment, your drive and your push. I want to talk to you about that foundation. I want to talk to you about where did this bubble from? How in such a young Black man, talk to me. Let's just be very clear about this. Mm-hmm. How in a young Black man that you had this kind of determination to push past that proverbial glass ceiling, that gate, that affixed position that so many of us run into and just step back into complacency. Talk to me about that.
Well, how would you you just open up another lid on the top of my head? Because I hadn't really gone into that part of my life for such a long time. Let me just start by saying the catalyst, I think, of my life was that I had a father that was like no other, and there may be conditions and reasons for him adapting that approach with us. Certainly. There was an impression made on him, a deep impression made on him when my mother passed, when I was only 2 years old, and my younger brother, Cecil, was only 7, 8 months old. My elder brother, Arnold, who was a twin, his sister had just died, and that left my dad and an ailing wife, my mother, Sybil Bethel, the Bethels from the Nassau Street, the funeral home. She was the third child of Rufus Bethel upon Nassau Street. Mm-hmm. So my mother died, and she gave this mandate to my dad to please take care of the boys. And that resonated with him. And I thought that...
This heavy what you're saying. This is prior to death. So she knew that there was a transition approaching.
Yes, yes.
She knew this.
Yes,
okay, cool.
Yes, yes. So, okay. So my father became somewhat afraid of the fact that the Bethels was going to come and to take the three of us and take them up on Nassau Street Hill to Ma Bethel, and which is my grandmother. And my dad then took us, because he was working on the oil truck as a kerosene oil deliverer at all of the stores around the community over the hill, as we would have known it to be back in the days. And my dad took the three of us and hid us in South Andrews in Drake's Hill, where his family came from. And there was an aunt of my dad, of an old lady by the name of Miss Mima. And I can still see her today, because she wore this big apron with two pockets in the front, and it tied around her neck and in the
classic
back.
Classic, Grammy, classic. Yeah.
And here's the part that really capped off the whole ordeal. She smoked a white clay pipe with tobacco. So,
you sure you didn't grow up in Maroc?
So, no. So my memory really came to me with the scent of this tobacco and a white clay pipe and an old lady that wouldn't let a fly light on me unless she killed the whole swarm of flies.
Wow.
So my dad left this there for some 2.5 years. My memory came to me, certainly down in Drake's Hill as a young man. And I only recall my dad coming back and getting us when it was time to go to school. So he brought us back and took us to our later school down at Duo Street. So that's when we came back to Nassau. But I understood and I knew and I could remember all of that aspect. I didn't remember going, but I remember coming back from Andrews some 2.5, 3 years later. But to fast forward a bit for you, Howard, my dad set policies because he was very afraid. He was very afraid of not doing the right things. There was always the challenge of a single family bringing up, and then a male bringing up three boys. There was a lot of unknown to him. So he made it a point to put in place policies that he would have been able to go to work and feel comfortable that we were comfortable at home. He made a lot of run back home, checking on us from time to time as we go to and from school. But the points were, there were very strict rules. And how it, I can tell you some of the, let me give you just one instance here. My dad said to us, in the morning, you will wake up, you will wash your face, clean your teeth, and comb and brush your hair, mm-hmm. in that order. And I always used to say,
well, it's militant.
As a young man growing up, that why in that order? And he says, because these are the things that I want you to do, and I want to make absolute certain that in my absence, you will follow my instructions, because he knew he would have to go to work, and we would have to go to school. And we really never really lost track of the voice of our father. He loved us dearly. He will come mm-hmm. home in the evenings and throw us, each one of us, up in the air, landing on the bed, tickle us to death. And we certainly had a relationship where there was four of us. And education was paramount to him.
He's heavy, what you do?
He would have said he will go out and find funds for anything that we wanted to do that was educational. No money for anything that was not.
No entertainment.
Nothing at
education.
All. Education. Mm-hmm. Education. Mm-hmm. So my eldest brother Arnold was the genius. I was the one in between that was always missed. My dad come home, so he speaks with Arnold about what took place today, and then he runs straight to Cecil, who was the youngest one, to see if he was okay. So I was always skipped over. So I was sort of a little loose in between, with more elbow room to do more things. And certainly it led me to getting in more mischievous things than they did at the time. In the neighbor's yard, stealing canaps, the plum trees, all of the things that little boys would have been doing that I was corrected for growing up.
Yes.
But I really do think that the trust of my dad and the love and the affection that he gave us made us so comfortable, especially me. I mean, I had a special relationship with him that he seemed to understood me more than Arnold and Cecil. I don't know, but there was this connection, and when it was time for us to go off to school and get a good education, it was important that he sat us down and tutored us. But I can tell you, it was not easy. It was not easy when it was time for me to go off to Chicago to school to become an engineer, because my dad, again, turned to the militant position and said, I'm not here to listen to your cries or your complaints. You're going to go off to school, and this is what you're going to do, and this is how you will grow. And I always felt as though that the sacrifice that my dad would have made throughout all the years in growing us up was something that I felt as though that I needed to prove to him that his sacrifice would not be in vain.
You know, you put a lot of things on the table just now, and it has my brain running up and down, because I try to think of your father and I imagine your environment. I ask myself, how many areas displaced from this kind of a position as it relates to slavery or the attachment of being betrothed to a grouping of people, your father would have seen that. How, as a single father, as a single man who just lost his wife with three boys, how then would he know within himself, in a time and an era where education was not necessarily pushed, labor was pushed, how would he know that education would be that proverbial buoyancy to lift you from the mire that you were in at the time?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, my dad had just, before he came home and met my mom and married her, my dad spent 8 years in New York. Mm-hmm. He had migrated to New York with his friends, Boyd Strawn, there was Jimmy Virgil, there was Charlie Major, Sr. They all lived in the Bronx in New York as Bahamians. And that's where my dad would have met Sidney Poitier, because Sidney and Jimmy Virgil were extremely close friends, to some extent relatives. And he lived in New York for quite some time. And he understood, of course, the war had just ended, World War II, and the Depression was a huge impact on his mind. I hear him speaking even right now about the challenges and the hard times that he would have encountered during his stay in the U.S. prior to coming back home. But while he was there, Jimmy Virgil was a tailor. My dad pressed the clothes in a steam press right next to Jimmy Virgil. So they all sort of stuck together in New York and did things to make a living. But at some point they started migrating back home, coming back to the Bahamas. Charlie Major came back, and of course Charlie has the stadium, and he was more instrumental in athletic physical training. My dad was a presser, Jimmy Virgil was a tailor. And Jimmy Virgil came back home and opened Jiffy Cleaners, and my dad came back home and started working at the altar. And that's how my dad actually met my mom, because my mom was a seamstress. She sewed a lot of dresses, and she did a lot of work up at the government house for whenever the governors have seaming work to do, really? Sewing, my mom would be doing the work there.
Wow.
And they had this occasion where my dad had to go in there to do some pressing for the governor and his guests. So my dad met my mom at the governor's house, where both of them were workers, I guess, or being of some service to the governor's house. But the article to this whole story was that my dad had a lot of global experience prior to coming back.
I was just about to pull this in. I was just about to say to you, based upon his external exposure, being able to go out into the world and understand, even in the midst of what was happening post, right at the end of World War II, and we saw the Great Depression and all these things, he understood one thing: education.
Yes.
That was heavy.
That was the way. That was, and it sold. You know, it was the only way out for us. Or was sold then, which he never got. But he understood the challenges of not having it.
Yeah.
He knew that it handicapped him immensely in not having it. So he was afraid that he didn't want us to experience similarly.
How did it propel you? Did it put in your mind at the time, even after you're sitting here and you're saying to me that I can hear his voice right now, it seems to me that, you know, it's almost like PTSD. You got that he's there with you, and you could hear him, and that kind of a push drives you to continue to go forward as he tells you, and this order, make sure you wash your face, you brush your teeth, comb your hair, and brush so forth and so on. If you hear this order, was this one of the things that actually propelled you to continue to be able to pursue one level of education and pursue one experience after another? Talk to me about it.
No, I really do think that when I first started, the catalyst for my educational foundation came when I attended Miss Smith's private school on the fort, Perry Christie, myself, Lois Bethel, Leanza Bethel, my brother Arnold. We all attended private school up on the fort. From there, I was able to get over to Weston Senior in Mr. Glover, T.G. Glover's school. Backward as I was, but my dad was able to get me into Weston Senior because he knew everybody driving around the community. And I was doing very, very, very bad, poorly in my academic year in Weston Senior. I sat at the back of the class and I knew nothing. The big guys in the class, Ed Moxie and Robert Taylor and the others, Mary Johnson from Lewis Street, they were the senior people in the class. And I felt, well, what am I doing? What am I doing here?
Yeah.
So I went home, and after sort of sitting sad, my dad says, "What's the matter?" And I told him what the challenges were in my class. And then he took me up to Mr. Johnson, a blind man in Augusta Street. And Mr. Johnson was a mathematician. And if anything changed my entire life academically, it certainly would have been the day my father introduced me to Mr. Johnson on Augusta Street. Mr. Johnson was blind, and when he called me in and he says, Craig, we have a long journey. He says, Craig, I want you to go to the back of the room, look on the shelf, the third shelf down, the fourth book from the right. He says, turn to page 25 and read that for me. And I started sort of spelling the words. My reading was so poor. I was spelling out things. And he says, oh, we have a problem reading as well. And I said, I didn't notice it. I mean, if you say so. But I knew that I was challenged with reading as well. So Mr. Johnson started on a mission with myself. And if there's anybody I love dearly who would probably be the person that I would always refer to as the shoulders in which I stand for the rest of my life would be Mr. Johnson. Because he was able to get me to start reading, and he made it sound as though that it was information that he wanted to hear, and that because he could not see, Craig, please learn how to read to tell me what's in these books. And I fell for that. I fell right through his trap.
So you fell
and I worked my every day I went home trying to do something. Wow. To learn how to read, to tell Mr. Johnson what was in
the book. I got
to
help him. He's a blind man.
He's blind.
My God, I got to help him.
But he's a mathematician.
Yeah.
He taught me how not to use calculators today. Slide rules was the thing of our day back then. All of the mathematical approaches. How do I do my algebra? How do I take shortcuts? And in Western Senior, the lowest grade was grade 4, and I was in grade 4B. And Miss Tynes was my teacher. And of course, teachers then taught 5 and 6 different subjects. So when it came to maths, I always knew nothing. So after being in Mr. Johnson's class, which this the first summer that I spent there, Mr. Johnson says, now you can go back to Western Senior. And when you go in, you can do the work. And I went back to Western Senior. And how
they were baffled. They couldn't believe.
It got to the point where when Ms. Tynes had to leave the class one day to go home for some emergency, she says, Craig, do you mind coming to the front of the class and continue the lesson until I return? And when I told my dad that, he was so elated. He threw me up in the air, of course, and tickled, because we always get tickles and throwing up in the air for anything great.
I never got tickles. I was a little too big, right?
I laugh. My dad never, ever, ever. Let us stop laughing. We laughed. We laughed the entire. And the only time we're not laughing in our house is either when he's sending us to Sunday school and he's serious because... That's one of the things that he've always said, and even up to his passing, he said if he could have done this all over again, there's one thing that he would have done a little bit different, spend in campus a little bit more in St. Agnes Church than anything else.
So faith actually played also a major part in the foundation of your growth.
Well, yes, because, again, my dad had some challenges. I remembered as a kid growing up, my dad then went on to establish a pool parlor because he was a good pool player in New York, and he brought the first billiard parlor pool tables to the Bahamas. And then we opened up a bar, and then we had this restaurant and bar that became extremely popular. Flowers Nightclub was the place, every single entertainer. And it's a lot of story about that because that's where I became more known to all of the musicians in the country. Every musician that entertained or played in the Bahamas.
This was a heavy time for musicians. A heavy time for musicians. I mean, they ran the city.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. George Simonet, who had a short leg, was my godfather. And there were Blind Blake, who was living right in the next corner from us, who came and spent. When you were true with your shows in the downtown Bay Street area at night, you came to Flowers Nightclub and Restaurant, where all the musicians will practice and have fun and entertain and spend time together. So I got to know all of them. But my father's club became very popular. And I was alluding earlier to say that because of the business that my dad was in, and his desire to keep us focused in St. Agnes. I remembered one day Dad came home and he was very sad, and I only says, "What's wrong?" And he alluded to me, Craig, it's not worth talking about, but I just keep insisting." And then he said, "Well, I wanted to make a donation to assist with the piano in St. Agnes Church, because we hadn't gotten an organ yet, and the church will not accept the donations because it's from a nightclub or
this
a bar."
This is heavy, what you're saying.
This
is heavy.
That and he felt, but how he got around it, he called his friend Bert Strawn, and Mr. Strawn came. He's also in St. Agnes, and he went and made the donation because my dad really only wanted to assist.
To get the money, yeah.
And make, be a part of his other friends making donations.
This. I love this kind of an idea to talk about because our society is not so much enriched at the foundation in the 70s and the late 60s, not so much with sort of this idea of education, but faith is important.
Yeah.
Faith is important, and a great deal of discipline was, I remember my grandmother used to threaten you in certain areas. You better watch out, you know, God gonna discipline. We always had this very clear understanding of our faith, and it led to superstitions in some areas. It led to a strengthening of relationship. It led to religion in certain areas. But for you to be able to have a conversation about education, I feel like we could have an entire show on that. But I want to talk about this. Yeah. I want to talk about this transition for you. You've gotten this foundation. You talked to us about it. You talked to us about this relationship. We now have a sort of an insight into your life as to these activities in terms of your father and the influence that your father has on your life.
Evident.
But you've gone off and you decided to be able to. Now, how did this decision come about for you to be able to move towards becoming a pilot?
I really had no interest in aviation at the time. I came back from school as a decent electrical engineer. I was happy to be an engineer because Mr. Johnson and others told me that my mind was very actively geared towards mechanical apparatus, and I enjoyed it. It came so easy to me. Even in Chicago, when I was in school, I took up air conditioning, refrigeration. I took up welding. I took up.
And this all the way from in the back of the class at our ladies in 4B.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Yeah. And a blind man tutoring me to make certain that I'm. So all of these things had a profound. And I felt obligated to some extent to be the best I can be for the people that made these things possible for me.
Yeah.
Particularly my dad. I mean that was the top. But I had no interest at the time or any knowledge of aviation. I came back home and I went to work for BEC at Big Pond Power Station. And of course, being a young man with a US degree, they said to me that I cannot be an engineer because I did not have a British equivalent of an engineering certificate.
Really?
So I had to take the City and Guilds course to get the equivalent. So I did a quick City and Guilds course that qualified me. Then I'm at BEC as an engineer, where I did all of the huge diesel power plants, calculation of their thrust and their power after being overhauled and calculated. I did all of the engineering work. That was not present because at the time they just overhaul engines and put them back in service. There was no checks to determine the efficiency of the engines after the massive, extensive work. Eric Simonet was one of the brilliant minds at the power station at the time. And then, of course, we went on to start the Clifton Pier turbines and the Sulsus at there. But at that time, my uncle, which was my mom's brother, Marcus Bethel, was a mortician. And I would have, he would have always come around looking and saying, "Craig, what are you doing? How are you?" They're always interested in what where I was and what I was doing. So I spent a little time with Uncle Marcus. And he had a Cessna 172 that took bodies from the Bahamas, do the dressing, and take them back to the family island. So I flew a few times with him in that respect. And he would let me hold the aircraft steering wheel, the controls. And I'd be coming back and forth with him. And I was so elated.
With cadavers.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I would have felt the need to. I was not being fulfilled with all of my aspirations at the time. And I said to BEC, "Well, I want to move on." I didn't have anywhere to go, really, but I just knew that.
You got to stick a pin right there. How do you know that you're not fulfilled with aspirations? You've done everything you can. You got the education that you weren't afforded. You pursue these things. You're identified socially, elevated, engineer. You've done everything. And you still don't feel accomplished?
Not at the time, because keep in mind there was a lot of other elements going on around us. At the time, Celindon was a leader that was preaching.
Give me the year. Which year is this? If you can remember.
1966, 67. Was preaching that the country was for us. We were told that the Bahamas needs us. The country was looking for
oh my God,
for persons to lead it. We were convinced that he was convinced that we were the answer. I mean, and at the time, like I said, you had Perry Christie, who went off to school. We all left the same year, thereabouts. Perry Christie went off to school. Bernard Nottage, Madeline Sawyer, myself. We were all at the same era
schooling. I want to be able to stick a pin right there. I got to take this commercial break and get back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take it from this inception, this juncture right here. We're going to talk about that. This idea that's being spilled into our environment, into the airs and spirits of Bahamian people, black boys and girls. The segregation that exists, whether pronounced or not, that spoke to the over the hill and the elites. And former prime minister in this particular position, I don't know whether or not he was a premier at this time. Was he premier?
Yeah, premier, yeah.
He was a premier at the time, speaking into the hearts and ears, the spirits of the Bahamian people, saying, the country is for us. Change the entire trajectory. And we're hearing about it today. Ladies and gentlemen, in the studio with us today, none other than Craig Flowers. You know him, his CEO and head over at FML. And you know him for all of that. I got a text here that says that Howard, he's helped so much persons over the years. We're going to dive deeper into this conversation right here on 96.9 FM Radio, The Foundation, with Howard Graham. We're going to be right back after this.
The party dancing, dancing, dancing. How did you do things in the party dancing? Dancing till the morning.
Ready to step into the future? From your front door to the backyard and everywhere in between. See and speak to whoever's there with Ring Video doorbells and security cameras now available at Alive. Protect what matters most, all from one easy app. Available in your Google or Apple Play Store. Visit bealive.com/ring to learn more. We are Alive.
The sixth edition of the Bahamas Games are on the way. July 7th through the 15th, get ready for inter-island sporting competition in the spirit of unity and camaraderie. Which island is gonna win? It's the Bahamas Games. Our nation, our talent, our games. And look out for the V Games crew coming to your island soon. For more information, call 809-1242 or visit thebahamasgames.org.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Excuse me for me to interruption. Boy, come. And a quick reminder to say, this coming Friday, I'm please come over the lawn. You went to see my number one town around town. And it's a Friday evening. Boom! The people have tired of working. Fana, fana. Lord, they made the disco play. Boom! It made them feel like dancing. Ain't no summer set. Britain will be great and with the disco operator. 5 double 18 and a 6 liter. And this a DJ Jump Sweeter. Still on the blues up with the echo chamber.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio. This is an interesting conversation. I mean, I got a text just now that says that it seems that he's lived a very interesting life. Ask him if he's ever thought about doing a biography, a movie on his life. We're going to get to those kind of conversations and talk about these things. I know that we have real social issues that we want to talk, but I think it's important. The reason why I brought you on, Mr. Flowers, and if you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, we're sitting with none other than Craig Flowers, really being able to talk about the journey of his success and the position that he's in. And one of the things I want to say, since we came back from the break, I want to say this. I'm blown away. In 66, 67, as the former prime minister, the then premier, starts to speak into the minds and spirits of the Bahamian people that we can do this, this idea, this chant that you can do this. As a black and brown boy, you can do this. You can do this. And it catches fire. This spark catches fire in the community, runs up and down and finds this particular position. I don't know, maybe this is why they call him Black Moses. I'm baffled by this. I'm baffled that even in this engineering capacity that you spoke of, you looked around, and I know at the time, based upon the qualifications that you had to meet, local, international, and to apply even deeper to do what you had to do, that you were making significant finances at the time in comparison to others in the community. But you still didn't feel satisfied. When we were on the break just now, you said, Howard, there were so much things going on around me. I couldn't just sit there. I'm baffled by it. Let me tell you why. In this day and age, and I don't know whether or not it's as a result of the political promises that were made, right? I don't know whether or not it's the idea that you're holding on to what your grandmother would have said to you, the MP can help you. But there is this mindset, a spirit, to do just enough to survive. There isn't this push, there isn't, socially, there isn't this push to kind of get out there and do these things. Maybe that's for the exception, but the general rule that exists now in this Bahamaland as we celebrate 50 years is to do just enough. I need to talk to you about that. I need to know more about that. And the reason I didn't let him speak is I got to go to news. I can't let him start and get into that. I got to go to news, but we're going to do that. I need to know more about what happened at the time to inspire, to encourage, to uplift Black and Browns, to unify our community. Despite the conversation that we're having, this is a unified community. What happened? Was it leadership that spoke this kind of an idea that, yes, we can? We got to get into that, guys. Let me take this commercial break, get into news, and be right back after this.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I miss it, come make me wheel and turn, yeah. Come make me do the shaky, 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 shake. I miss it one step back, I miss it two step forward. Rub and go down and then you rub and come up. Cause it's a robot of evening. Bim! The people them turn off freaking. Finish, finish.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio. I am in school today. What? I am elated, immersed in this conversation. I truly am. Every time I have an opportunity to be able to talk to Mr. Flowers, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking with none other than Craig Flowers. So the history, the objective of the show is really to be able to trouble the water of stagnation locally, to be able to give a contrast of where we are now in comparison to where we started off. And just before we went on the commercial break, I needed to know about 66 and 67 with Celinda taking on a position to be able to be deliberate in his position to talk about the possibility of you being able to acquire something for yourself, the possibility of you being able to get out of the muck and mire and the disdains associated with slavery and this separation. You can do it. This sort of a prelude to Barack Obama, I guess, but in a truer sense, right, that there is a possibility for you to do more. And that idea being not only, it didn't fall on deaf ears. I just feel like it didn't fall on deaf ears. So many persons was able to take it up. This sort of an idea that said, I'm going to move forward. I'm sure that there was the exception and the rule, right? The rule at that time is that we must be able to use this inspiration to move forward. So many persons, we can see it every day now. And the exception is many persons who kind of rejected that particular idea. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about this country is for us. That's where we left off. Give me a comparison now, because I think a lot of persons would have known, and we got a very clear idea of the foundation. Give me a comparison of where we are now. We started this journey off 66, the inception of in 73, let's do that. In 73, we started this journey off by being able to identify our independence. The Union Jack fell, the Bahamian flag rose, the environment infused with the sense of independence and liberty, the opportunities were rich, and you're off. Talk to me about what you see now, 50 years displaced, in comparison to what we started off with.
That's a pretty big question, because the journey has been so 50 years of our country, and particularly since independence, it's difficult to compare. I don't want to go back and start talking about how things used to be and how things are today, because it won't be fair to the evolution of time. All of us, every one of us here in this country, how it has gone through changes, and we've grown to become a person or persons in this country that evolve to where we at. And it comes with sacrifice. It came with a lot of things that we had very little, if any, say in. If we're talking about culturally what we've gone through for changes, if we're talking about what is the most talked about item today in our lives where we find ourselves, is technology. It's all about a digital world. It's about biometrics. It's about artificial intelligence. It's about coding. It's about the language of today is not the same language that was in the streets and in our minds when we were kids growing up. We had more of a personal contact with our mentors and with leaders and with persons that gave us guidance. We, as a young man growing up, I had no idea what direction I wanted to go in. I looked around. The cruise ships came to the Bahamas, and a lot of us were going and getting jobs working on the cruise ships. And I thought that would be a great idea to be able to leave the Bahamas. And then the racetrack was a great part of our environment back then, where the racetrack opened for a certain period of the year, and then it closes. And then there were the season of sports, cricket, was this. There were so many different environments. I, as a kid growing up, cherished those days, and I don't think that any of us, I'm going to be 81 in a few days, and I know that my journey, the lens through which I saw this whole thing evolve, has been, some may say, for whatever reason, truly amazing, for whatever reason, but if you want to compare yesterday with today, it's going to be a challenge for us. I don't like comparing. I like to speak about the massive amount of things that have transpired positively in our lives, to try and take that and use it as a catalyst for me to really become better from.
Do you believe that there was a paradigm shift? I started it off by being able to say that during your era, during your time, to have leadership take on such a strong role. And these conversations, as I read the vision book, as I hear these stories about Lyndon Pinling, the inception and sort of the motivation of the people, this wasn't just mere political pontification. This wasn't just talking points. Coming from his heart for the growth and development of the people. I want to know whether or not you believe the paradigm has shifted in the community.
If you're talking about leadership, I think that leaders all have their own style. We can sit and characterize from the things, and for the most part, people see leaders from the perspective of what have they done for themselves. Mm-hmm. For me, I thought, at the time, the leadership in the person of Sir Lyndon Oscar Pinling, was paramount, because we were just evolving, looking for identification of ourselves. There was a huge, huge global book that was opening right in front of our face, and it was our country. And we were told that all of these places, all of these spaces needs to be filled. Come on, get qualified and get in the race and do something. And we were constantly pushed to excel, to get into that. I give you a case in point, Howard. And I know I'll go back to it sometime later in the talk show. But I walked down the steps of a 727 that I flew from New York here to Nassau, my first flight. And at the bottom of the steps were Eddie Nepiuch and a few other people there for the media. There was my dad. There was a variety of people, Celindon and others, just congratulating Craig Flowers, the first black pilot for Northeast Airlines out of New York. And for that moment, everybody felt proud, felt as though that I have done the Bahamas good. I have done this country well, because it was, and I felt as though I was obligated to do it because I was given the opportunity to.
Did you feel a sense of accomplishment when you stepped down that last step?
Well,
this kind of this barrage, these persons being able to shower you with accolades.
Well, in the moment for me, I didn't see the accolades being necessary. I saw that I made some prominent people in my life proud. But for me, I just felt as though that it's work. It's something that I need to get done. I was on it in New York in 72, 71. By Boax Boyle. Brock Peterson, myself, was on it. Brock Peterson was in the theatrical, in the movies. Myself was from aviation. And there was another gentleman there from music, Bobby Jones, that was being honored in New York. Governors, mayors, they spoke. I don't, for me personally, I am not about the accolades or the recognitions or the accomplishments. I'm always looking for, what can I do to become better? What can I do to...
Even at 80 years old?
Even at 80 years old, absolutely. Today, I just make some steps here with you, just real briefly. I mean, look at the places I've been able to make an impression on. If I go to the Turks and Caicos, I know the premier there personally. If I had gone to, well, even before the assassination in Haiti, I've spent time with Martelly and the previous government there, Jonel, in Haiti. I've been able to say, well, in the United States, I've had a relationship with Barack Obama. I go across and I says, well, I'm in Africa for 14 years. I've been able to work personally hand in hand with Colonel Gaddafi. And in doing so, I get to sit with Idi Amin. I get to listen to Yasser Arafat with the Palestinians problem. And these are all leaders. These are all people that...
Global leaders.
That I've been able to have this opportunity on an amazing journey. But I don't see any of that, any of that at all as anything that I need to be talking about, or that I need to be boasting or shouting about. I saw that as a journey. And you know, not wrapping up, I had the pleasure, like I said, somewhere when we discuss or come back, of spending time with my dear friend Sydney Poitier and my other colleague and certainly my confidant, Tommy Robinson, back in at the time when I became the first black pilot for Northeast Airlines, working out of New York and Boston, there were a lot of racial issues because it's 1969, Martin Luther King is still marching in Birmingham. There were civil rights movements all over the United States. There were racial slurs. There were dogs and all of the other things, and people calling you nigger and black and this and the other thing. And yet, I had to sit before five white men in Boston, Massachusetts, to be interviewed at the same time, and to convince something in this little kid from Farm Road there's something in this kid from Farm Road and Grantstown that is convincing us that it's time for us to hire a black pilot. And something is...
In the midst of racial segregation and this sort of the temperature continuing to rise, in the middle of Boston,
yes,
which is a heavy area.
In Boston.
In the middle of Boston. Yes. They while they speak liberation, you know their commitments in another area.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? They looked at you, gave you an opportunity, first black pilot.
A predominantly white state was saying that something this young man had said and something that he has done has convinced us that we are going to invest into him. It was nothing about my ability to fly because there were a lot of others. We came qualified as pilots. They didn't make me a pilot. What they did was gave me an opportunity. I walked in the door like others with the same qualifications. But there had to have been something that resonated with them, something that transcend. Gaddafi always used to say to me in Tripoli every time we get back to Aqaba Air Force Base, one of these days, Captain Flowers, you're going to tell me, what did you say to five white men in Boston, Massachusetts in 1969 to convince them that you're that pilot, you're that person? What did you say?
I think time has given us a glimpse into what could possibly be said. I was stopped, a quick joke, and then I got to ask you a question. Going up 95, I was going to, was it King's Dominion? I was going somewhere with my kids, and I was going beyond the speed limit. I didn't know I was going this fast. Cop pulled me over. What are you doing, boy? You know you're speeding. I said, oh, man, I'm sorry for that. I ain't from here. I'm from the Bahamas. Gave him my passport, my driver's license. And he says, man, I love the Bahamas. I really enjoyed myself down there. You guys just watch yourself how you're going on this road. The idea of you being outside of the United States of America, because the fight was internal. The fight was a civil right fight internally. To be identified externally could be one of the possibilities that they leaned in your direction.
Well, that too. But I thought that there was a lot of other influences aside from... my personality, and I thought that Selinden also would have made the remark, because we were there for some 8 days before the final decision was made, and then there was a remark because my friend Nyan Roll at the time would have said to me that Selinden would have said to them, If Captain Flowers is qualified, then you all should hire him. If he's not, then you all should let him know so that he can come back home. Was the talk with my friends, but I knew that Selinden had wished me well and had always supported and would have been there for me in every aspect in every way, and but I mean, you know. I speak about sound bites, and it's not giving this journey justification because there were so many other elements that supported it that's going on around in our community, in our surroundings. That is just,
we hear about the upside of the roller coaster. We hear about, you know, this idea of when you are on the climb. We hear a lot of these particular stories, but we know since you returned in 1998, I think you came back home in 1998. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Since you came home in 1998 and you actually got into the numbers business at the time, what we consider the numbers racket, and being able to do those particular things and then transitioning in the early 2012 to legitimize this particular space, being heralded as one of the persons, the mind behind how this could be developed and move forward and be able to, you know, find opportunity for all and sundry. There was significant pushback as a result of that. And when you bring up the story about your father doing his best to kind of be able to support St. Agnes Church with the funds for the piano, it reminds me of this position that maybe the church has taken on the same approach as it relates to trying to formalize something that everyone in the country in more in one space or another was doing. Talk to me about that particular journey.
I grew up, I was an altar boy. I was in St. Agnes. So Father Cooper And me, my brother Arnold, and I, and my dad always wanted us to be a major part of St. Agnes. I knew that there were prayers to be said. I knew that we believed. For me personally, I've always felt like I had a guardian angel walking beside me all my life, all my life, and that. If I look up my right side or my left side, this tall person in a robe is just reaching down, holding my hands, and that I always felt comfortable. Sometimes I thought, maybe that's my mom. But as I grew older, I realized that it was something greater than or stronger than my mom. And I knew that it was my inner self. I've had opportunities of having to have to address my inner core, my inner self, who I am, from a religious perspective, and I know that I am grounded. I know that my faith. I know that all of these things, that you may have heard me spoken to today. I mentioned to you the old lady in South Andres earlier in the show.
In Drakes Hill,
that I came to know. When we were leaving, she would have dressed us all up and was pushing it out. And she gave me a little advice when I was leaving. She says, "Now, Craig, you're going to Nassau, and you're going to go to school, and you be a good boy, and you remember, always remember to be good, because goodness never goes to waste." And that's not a resignation. I said, "What do you mean? Goodness never goes to waste in my mind." But it grew with me. It grew with me over and over and over and over that goodness never goes to waste. And I probably would have formed in my mind, Howard, a condition around those remarks. And to me, it meant, just as I sit here today, it meant to me that the success that I would have been able to accomplish in my entire life was not any way, shape, or form anything that I would have been in control of. That inside of me, I have been chosen by others who have gone on before me with their goodness. That there were my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my mother, my whomever, who worked themselves to death, and this is in my mind, and never got their goodness here. Before they would have left. They, in their kind thoughts, would have looked back and says, "You know what? I'm going to give my goodness to Craig. I'm going to trust, I'm going to believe that Craig is going to do the right thing with my share of hard work and goodness." Because it never goes to waste. I can always use it later. That
it's heavy what you're saying.
And that,
because there's a biblical principle says that the sins of the father falls on the children. So if it works for sins, what about
the goodness?
Oh, talk to me.
And this is why I put together the remarks, and it gave me a support all my life that I am being asked by others who were here before me to take their hard work and do something good with it. All right? And that's what transcends in me to push me every day. Why am I at the age of 80? Because I have been given something that don't belongs to me to share it with others. That's my role.
Do you lean on this goodness when, because there is significant social pushback, and I'm sure that you still see the residual effect of it. I know that we've done this long enough, and the numbers, the game has been established in our society and identified. Do you still see the residual effect that you have to keep leaning back on a very clear understanding that this goodness is provided for more than myself? Now I could extend it to the community.
I really, do believe that I have an obligation to be the best or do the best I can. I went to Libya with this profound notion that I went there to fly, but going there, I became a different person in living in another culture, in living, I found out that the Islamic way of being continuous, relentless with a belief is a foundation that we need to have. My sense of this goodness on a daily basis is what drives me to make me get out of bed every day. I don't feel that I have to do anything else to prove anything to anyone about who I am or what I am, because it doesn't apply. Profound things, how we are going to understand in life, is that more than 90% of us who wake up every morning and go to work and come face to face with the challenges of the day, the purpose that we are here in these positions is believing that a monetary accomplishment will resolve all of my problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And nothing can be more further from the truth. Okay? Because I've been able to surpass that. I don't know today what light bill is. I don't know today what mortgages are. I don't know today what any type of financial setbacks is not.
What's many in my would part. Identify as burdens.
Right, precisely. Okay. Now, here is the challenge that you do have in this element, though. And I say that because when you push yourself all your life, when you've pushed yourself to the limit to be the best that you can be, your brain, your body, A, is to go, is to constantly be moving.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've removed more than 90% of the challenges you have in life,
which is financial.
Then financial.
As a black man. Okay, talk to
now,
me.
Now, what do you do with this brain power and this space?
This is an amazing thing that you do it.
Over your lifetime.
This is an amazing thing that you're saying.
What do you do with it?
After you have accomplished this thing, and you still got a lot of life to live.
That's my point. And therein lies the challenges for so many of us who spend their entire life chasing this myth that all I need to do is to become wealthy. Well, you need to do something else. I can tell you. You need to do something else. You need to ask yourself, how are you going to become wealthy? And if that is by, for the layman term, hard work, if that is the path that you're taking to get there, then you have to be very careful.
You know, I really think that there is a significant disparity between rich and wealth. This conversation that you're having with me finds its root in wealthiness. But, you know, the example that you give, that those persons who are seeking to be able to attain something, these tangibles, they seek to get rich, right? And you're saying to me, in your explanation, while I'm listening, you're saying to me, wealth is a relentless pursuit, not of the tangibles, but purpose. And as a result of that, you'll have these particular things added to you. That is an amazing thing. Mr. Flowers, you got to let me take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a strong conversation. I enjoy it so very kindly. Guys, I want you to be able to tune in and give me a telephone call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the family of islands. Absolutely toll-free, 242-300-5720. And hit me up on the text, 422-4796. I'm going to take this commercial break and be right back after this.
Excuse me for me to interruption. Boy, come. And a quick reminder to say, this coming Friday, I'm please gonna roll the lawn. You went to see my number one town around town. I did so Friday.
We are going back to Cali, BK style, with the California King Collection, only available at Burger King Nassau. Enjoy your choice of plant-based, crispy chicken, or fire-grilled beef, topped with melted bacon, freshly sliced red onion, ripe tomato, crisp lettuce, and BK's creamy guacamole, all served in a toasted brioche bun. The California King Collection packs a tidal wave of flavors and is made with only quality ingredients that are refreshing and filling with every bite. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
shopping is so rewarding with my Fidelity credit card. I get the best prices with price protection. Earn and redeem Freedom Points at my favorite stores. Get cash back. Plus, I booked a cruise. Get your Fidelity credit card today. Call 356-7764.
Ready for the ultimate beach soccer showdown. The Bahamas Football Association presents the 2023 CONCACAF Beach Soccer Championship from May 8th to 14th. Head to the Beach Soccer Stadium beside the Sydney Poitier Bridge and witness the action. Cheer on the Beach Boys as they compete against powerhouses from 11 countries across the region, like Mexico, El Salvador, and the USA. Gather your friends, family, and flags and cheer on our Beach Boys. Admission is absolutely free. For more information, visit BahamasFA.net. Don't miss out on all the action at the 2023 CONCACAF Beach Soccer Championship, May 8th to 14th. See you there.
Marco's Pizza, we never skip on quality or ingredients. Save some cash and satisfy your cravings with our new carry-out medium two-topping pizza for only $12.50. That's right, order two of your favorite toppings like sausage and green peppers on one medium pizza for only $12.50. Fat inclusive on our app or online. Made daily with fresh dough, our signature sauce, and fresh cheese. Only at Marco's Pizza. Restrictions apply.
When you testify in court, you're expected to tell the truth on your insurance application form. If you don't answer every question truthfully, you could be found guilty of misrepresentation. Leaving out just one piece of information on your insurance application can lead to misrepresentation. That means your insurance company could deny your policy or refuse to pay your claim. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, protecting the interests of policyholders.
It's a special day for mom and she deserves the best. Bring her into Baja and let's de-stress. We'll pamper her and make her feel safe. Get mom a nice spa day.
Come visit us at Baja Retreat Spa. Purchase a gift for mom and call us today at 323-6711.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Excuse me for my interruption. Before you come, and a quick reminder to say, this coming Friday, I'm please come over the lawn. You're going to see my number one town around town. And it's a Friday evening, boom! The people have tired of working. Fana, fana, Lord, they made the disco playing, boom! It make them feel like dancing. Ain't no summer set. Britain will be greater with the disco operator. 5 double 18 and a 6 liter. And this a DJ talk sweeter. See London just a up with the echo chamber. Watch your man. Play the play. And them on tear off the game. Them off is tipping with them cast it down and play. Oh Lord. Play 45. Let's keep them alive. Play this coming, team up and play LP.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio. The foundation with Howard Grant. Listen to me, man. This is riveting. I gotta listen back to this 15 times. I know that you're out there. Howard, why didn't you ask him this? Howard, why didn't you ask him you know, on the break just now? He says, Howard, if you're gonna be able to take we're giving you sound bites on this stuff, but if we're going to talk about my life in its entirety, we'd be here for months. And I agree with him 100%. And so I want to talk about these things, and I want to talk about more locally. I know that we can talk about family. I know that we can talk about immigration matters. We can talk about leadership. We can talk about innovation and technology. I want to talk more specifically about, you alluded to it a little earlier, but this idea about leadership being able to take on different forms for different times and eras. Lyndon Pinning was a type of leader for his particular era, and we've seen different, you know, the evolution. It was an amazing thing that you did that. It's the first time I heard that. The contrast is unfair to the evolution of time. Mm-hmm. To be able to give a contrast in this comparison is unfair to the evolution of time. First time I heard it like that, but I agree with you. And but I want to know, since you've been able to live in a certain dispensation and still carry this passion and idea with you, there is much conversation about conviction externally. There's much conversation about what is going on in the world around us. And there is a great expectation that our leadership, local leadership, would align themselves in accordance to not taking on these concepts globally, but being able to find the conviction to make the decisions to change our communities. And for the most part, sitting in this particular seat, listening to a great deal of persons, we're saying that leadership, not identified through any political organization, but governmental leadership, mm-hmm. has not amalgamated that sort of conviction to make the decisions to move the country forward. What are your ideas on that?
Well, you know, I've been a part of the journey as to understanding, for the most part, how we got here, how we got where we're at, and I've been, for want a better word, closely aligned over the years with one of the political parties who spent most of the time in the governing position of my tenure. So, leadership, yes. You know, after school, for me, I've always taken a position, Howard, that leadership, it's so important, but where we find ourselves today is for the Bahamas, and I'd speak specifically from here because I don't want to compare it with all of the other countries that I've had the opportunity to live in, but for the Bahamas, I would say the problem we have here in the Bahamas for leadership is there don't seem to be a united coalition to identify where does the populace really want to go. What do the people want for this country, and not what individuals want? What is the path? Don't want to say this, but we had the same problems in Libya, all right? Because I was very close to the administration there, certainly with the council members and others listening to a path forward in all the struggles and all of the challenges I would have had dealing with all of Europe and trading and interacting by way of aviation for the country. So when it comes to leadership for the Bahamas, what I'm speaking to is if we can get to the point where we could stop seeing things and doing something else. We've been alluding to the fact that the Bahamas is for Bahamians, the Bahamas is for Bahamians, but that's only been given to us in a form of listening.
So
or
theoretically.
Not practically,
not actually, not tangibly for the majority of us in the country.
Even to the point where we haven't really sat down. I have so many remarks about a national plan, all of these things that are spoken. But the challenge we have is that I think how it is that until we can get to understand what is it that the country, the people really wants as a destination. Right now, for instance, we have a variety of young men and women who are professionals who are abroad, and they don't know what to do with themselves as the new inheritance of this country. They don't. They may decide to stay abroad where they will chase monetary satisfactions.
Your return wasn't the pursuit of monetary satisfaction. Your return was the pursuit of development and growth.
Precisely.
For the community.
But keep in mind, given this, that was after I was able to make millions of dollars in Africa. After I would have achieved a certain wealth.
So the 90% was out of the way.
It was I came home with millions of dollars.
So you were straight.
So I was in a position where...
What do I do now?
Deciding to look at this gaming platforms, and this was simple for me. I mean, cheapest, I've been... Our database in Libya and in Rome, where my office is at, or in Charles de Gaulle at Paris, where all our aircrafts are maintained.
It's all digital. That's everything I've done. Everywhere I go, everything in Europe is digital. I came home and...
Did you feel like this was archaic? Not really.
Not really. I felt it was a great opportunity for me to convince others that we can do this. We can change this. And yes, it was an area that I had no big idea that it would be monetarily beneficial, but I knew that what was being done can easily be done with a platform, a database, and I knew that if we continue down this path, that others will come. All I needed to do was to educate them.
Was there ever a wrestling of the anchor that you talked about a little earlier, the anchor of faith?
Because absolutely.
You wrestle with that?
Absolutely. The challenges I would have had was during the referendum, there was a challenge for me personally because I knew that the churches were putting up an opposition to the yes vote in relation to gaming being regulated in the industry. And I would have had a meeting, or a matter of fact, two meetings with, I can't remember the gentleman's name that led the Christian group for the no vote, but he and I would have met. He was a
pastor. Was it Mario Moxie?
No, he was a pastor.
Okay.
He was a pastor of one of the clergies of the diocese. And he would have introduced me to six or eight of the young men that they tutor in the council and asked me to speak to them. We were at the, and then it was the College of the Bahamas that we had the meeting. And I could have only stood up there and spoke to them about my personal achievements, but no foundation could have been had to make the argument by myself that what I was doing was right in their minds, along the lines in which they made the presentation. I only spoke to financially and satisfying a populace that place.
Need a job, they need this. So this
that was
actually
unorganized.
Yeah.
And if this is going to be contentious with the belief, I want to assure you all that I am on your side with a religious approach to most things in my life. I just believe at the time that this gaming aspect of it is going to get out of hand, out of control, mm-hmm. if it's not organized.
Yeah. So this was essentially to organize the confusion that existed
Existed running all around the place.
Wow.
And if we can structure it, we can now contain it where it can now be spoken to, because
wow.
there was no representation for it.
Wow.
And the churches will have missed this forever and ever. But let us structure it, organize it, and then have a conversation with it.
Wow.
Was my argument to them in the meeting. And this were he and six or seven young men in our meeting at the College of the Bahamas where we had the meeting.
Did they still push back?
I understood that they had to continue their pursuit in reference to a no vote.
And they already started. They introduced you to the congregation.
Yes. I only tried to explain what was in my head and my views and my opinion at the time.
Let me see if I can take a telephone call, Mr. Flowers. Caller on the line with us live. Go ahead. No? Ladies and gentlemen, please give me a call. 323-622-32, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the Family of Islands, 242-300-5720, or you can be able to hit me at 422-4796. And if you're calling, I want to be able to be as abrupt as possible. You see that we're kind of getting out of here. So please don't give me an expansive conversation. Let's get with the question and get right out. Caller on the line with us live. Go ahead, caller. Turn your radio down for me, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. This is Craig Flowers. You talking about it?
Yes, sir. Turn your radio down for me, please, sir. Put your headphones on right there. Go ahead, sir.
All right. This is Mr. Flowers.
Yes, Mr. Flowers is on with us. Go ahead.
All right. Craig.
Yeah, hi, go ahead. I'm listening. Hello?
Caller, I'm going to have to let you go after you pull your sheets together, your notes. Let me see if I can get the next caller. Caller, you on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me, Howard?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Hey, Spark here.
Spark, you can't be long today. You got to get some more callers. Go ahead.
I don't have to be long. Good evening, Mr. Flowers. How are you doing, bro?
I'm very well. I'm still building that kite, Sparky, so we have to get on the fort. I have a big box kite, so we need to get that up.
Yeah, but you know, I was calling you about, you know, but I was so pleased to hear you was on the show, and you know, bucket mode, Howard wouldn't give nobody a chance.
Sparky, you're the one with the bucket mode. Stop it. Go ahead.
Mr. Flowers, you know, I know your passion. You know my passion. You know my love for the country. I know your love for country. That's necessary to have nothing to do with money and wealth, whether I'm a poor man and you're a millionaire. I know how you go. We sat with many times. How would them know but some of the things we did and what we got on the burner. But I hope, Mr. Flowers, don't forget, my passion is to get that kids and kites on the Western Fort again, so we could get all them children up there and give them one day out on a Saturday. The junker will fly, guys, shoot some marbles, do some hula hoop and all the things that we all did when we were kids in our time.
That's right.
Let's bring it back, please, Mr. Flowers. Please, that mouth.
I'm going to do that, Sparky.
Thank you, man, Sparky. Appreciate your telephone call. Yeah, I want to talk to you about these things. I got a couple of texts. A person says that you have helped a lot of people in the community. After you push past this 90% that you talk about, because, you know, that's in my mind now. We ain't going to let that go. After you push past this 90%, after you got into this position and you can move smoothly through the duration, through this 10% and do what you have to do, has your philanthropy actually kicked up significantly? Have you been able to give back to the community in one way or another? Talk to me about it.
Well, you know, the major challenge you have is how it is. You have to get your mind. Once you've removed all of this push to accomplish monetary achievements, and then all of a sudden when you wake up and it don't exist, you have to be in control of your mind. The problems I've had was really how do I stabilize my mind now to deal with the everyday life? Because my problems aren't the average person problems that I'm interacting with every day. My problems are when I do a say or move somewhere, it's not the everyday person's problem. So I just want to speak more to the state of mind that you have to take control of once you've achieved this 90% of struggle that you fight so hard to get to. And to be realistic, there are very few of us that would ever achieve.
You are considered a 1%er.
I just want to say that it is not as glamorous and as beautiful as one would think. You'd have to learn. You'd have to learn on how to deal.
That's hilarious.
You must learn how to deal with
listening to you say
with success.
Yeah.
Success is not going to stay around if you don't know how to deal with it.
People, the correlation of the words success, I could only attribute that to wealth, where there is riches. This is fleeting. Riches is fleeting. Mm-hmm. And whatever you attain can only be able to live momentarily. But if you talk about wealth, we know that there is sustainability, there is longevity, there is the endurance for long suffering to get to the objective and to retain that, because you've gone through all what you had to go through to get that.
Certainly.
right? So the riches may be something else. I want to leave. I want to kind of wrap this up in these last few minutes with you being able to speak to the next generation futuristically. You talked significantly, and it's not going to leave me, about this sort of an idea not to be able to contrast. It'd be unfair to contrast the evolution of time and be able to look at yesterday and tomorrow. So let's isolate it to tomorrow. Let's look at tomorrow and speak to the hearts and minds, the spirit, to those particular persons, men and women, who want to be able to ascend to leadership and contribute in one way or another.
The future has to lie in the hearts and minds of the younger generation who sees a path here. If not, for the most part, the majority of the talented young Bahamians will find themselves migrating and going elsewhere to chase their dreams. For those of us who sees and can find a path, the challenges we have, Howard, is technology for all of us, okay? We're not going to live the life that we knew yesterday. Today, tomorrow will be entirely different. We are accepting these changes in our lives without asking any questions. As a people, we wake up every morning, and tomorrow, if Apple puts out a new iPhone, we are in line trying to purchase one. We are making sacrifices of ourselves to the unknown, to a place where we don't know where technology is going to take us, because we keep buying it and not asking any questions. We are not asking or saying, where is it that we want this country or ourselves to go? I mean, if you go out today and you sit in a restaurant, everybody heads down in their phone. The manner in which we interact as human beings with each other have drastically changed. And that's going to be the determining factor.
I like that. Comparison to that. In terms of our interaction, but not necessarily to the timeline entirely.
Because technology has taken us to a new place. In our governments, government is holding on with tooth and nails because the method in which it communicates. Governments are only popular when they can convince the populace that they are of their choice, and if the message and the messenger is doing the right job. The method in which we communicate today is no longer the old analog method of mainstream media. Social media is leaps and bounds in front of the message from a government.
Wow.
And the younger people are really not going to sit and be governed anymore by those things.
Mr. Craig Flowers, I want to thank you so much for being able to take time out of your relentlessly, perpetually busy schedule in your globe-trotting stance to be able to sit here with us and speak to the hearts and minds and spirits of the Bahamian people. I know that a lot of persons may feel indifferent. I know you would have been able to feel the residue as you go about. But notwithstanding everything, the pushback, the situation you have, you are a tremendous jewel in the crown of what we believe to be this progressive Bahamas. We want to thank you so very kindly for being able to sit here with us, to be able to lend us of your knowledge and make us to understand that there is still an opportunity to move forward, that there's no need to compare, that evolution does what it should, but understand to empower ourselves in the positions that we are to move forward into the future. My brother, I thank you. I thank you so very kindly for being able to take the time to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for tuning in and being a part of that. Make sure you go down there, check out Willie's, check out the Tiki Hut. Please do that over the weekend. I want you to have a great time and enjoy yourself. Go down to the Vanyas on Prince Charles and have a good time with those persons. I thank you for tuning in. Enjoy your weekend. Be safe. I want to see you guys on Monday morning. Be responsible if you got to take a taste. I don't want to see nothing in the news and social media. Please be here on Monday. God spare our lives, and we can dive back into this and talk about the landmark ruling. We got to talk about this on Monday. The landmark ruling for the Privy Council, and also the position for the Justice of the Peace. The Chief Justice. Thank you, guys. Have a beautiful time. Enjoy your weekend. Stick and stay for Zhivago Lang with Z Live right after this. Have a great weekend, guys.
Until the morning, I'm missing you dicks in the party. Dancing, dancing, dancing. I'm missing you dicks in the party. Dancing, dancing till the morning. Brought me girlfriend out the gate side, waiting, been waiting, been waiting.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.